It's time to say goodnight to inefficient night storage heaters. Bulky, unattractive, with no precise control, leaving you boiling in the morning and rather chilly at night. So tune in to Fisher Future Heat, home heating systems that give you a steady, controllable supply of heat 24 hours a day. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric. For years and years, heating has meant boilers, and boilers have meant breakdowns. Over here and over here. Anything but music to your ears. At Fisher Future Heat, we create state-of-the-art home heating systems that we fit, then you forget, with no annual servicing needed and a huge 10-year guarantee. In short, we engineer common sense. Search Fisher Future Heat today. Fisher Future Heat. The future is electric.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Tristan Riddell.
And you're listening to the Nerd Party.
Talk nerdy to me.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello, everyone. This is episode 16 of the Nerd Party, and we are so thankful that you guys are listening to us. We're getting more and more listeners, more and more subscribers every single week, so we thank you a great deal. We promised you last episode that we would talk about our five-star ratings, and we would talk and thank the people who did it. And I know we've done some of these in the past, but we just wanted to do some of the new ones now. And it's been a long time since we've even talked about it. And we want to keep our promise. We want to thank SDC_SDC, Sequest Forever, Rachel from STL, and Oh the Profanity. Now, I'm pretty sure we've done most of those before, but I just wanted to get those in there. Thank you so much, guys. For listening to us and taking the time to give us a rating and giving us a review. There's a few other people out there who have given us a rating but no review. If you do give us a review, we'll mention you on the podcast, and thank you so much for your support. I've gotten a few messages via email and through Tumblr lately. I want to thank you guys for reaching out to us, and it's just really nice to know that people are enjoying the show.
Yeah, this little show is growing. We're definitely thankful. Even if you don't leave us a review, even if you just rate the show, we've gotten nothing but 5-star reviews from people who have reviewed us on iTunes. So we're incredibly grateful for that.
And also, if you listen to us outside of the U.S. and you give us a rating or a review, send us an email so that way we can thank you on air, because we can't check every single iTunes store that's outside of the U.S. So please send us an email at contact@thenerdparty.com.
Well, we could, but it would involve us changing DNS servers constantly, so.
And that is a huge pain in the ass.
Better you let us know, and we'll mention you on the show.
Now, today we're going to be talking about TV shows that then became movies, or movies based on TV shows, and we're doing our usual top five. But before we get into that, in the past couple of weeks, the Fantastic Four trailer finally dropped. This is essentially the first stuff that we've seen. Like, even the pictures have been incredibly rare, and they've just been a few green screen leaks. And the trailer dropped, and it was a quick teaser. I think it was only about a minute.
Yeah, it's pretty much the definition of a teaser. And you mentioned that this is the first substantial thing that we're seeing. That's true. We've seen behind the scenes stuff, and of course it looks unfinished because it's supposed to be computer generated stuff, but that hasn't stopped people from saying that this film's going to be a disaster. I don't think there's been, of all the superhero films that are coming out, and there are a lot, it's a full-blown genre these days, I don't think there's been much more internet negativity or controversy that has been stirred up from another film other than this Fantastic Four reboot.
Yeah, there has been a lot of negativity swirling this. I think there's just been so much news about this. I mean, there's been so much behind the scenes going on. We had a Fantastic Four movie not that long ago. We had one, what was it?
It was 8 years ago? No, 10 years ago. It was 2005 was the first That's one, right. And 2007 was the sequel.
That's right. And as we all know, Chris Evans played the Human Torch, who we both know and love. And not in real life anyway, but you know what I mean. And I just feel like, so a lot of people were kind of like, oh, okay, this is a lot like the Spider-Man reboot. Like, why are we having a reboot when these movies weren't that long ago? And they changed the race of a character, which is sensitive in a lot of people's minds, not these podcasters, but in a lot of people's minds. And they had some, apparently they had some issues filming where they had to go back for extensive reshoots, which is never a good sign. And also, they said that they weren't following the original comics. Like, I think Kate Mara, the person who's going to be playing the Invisible Woman, was instructed not to read any of the comic books because they're not following anything in the comics, and that information got leaked. And so it was just a lot of bad blood from the beginning.
Yeah, but I think some of the stuff that you mentioned is just so undeserved. I mean, well, let's not even get started on the fact that the Human Torch is now an African-American. I could care less. Apparently that's a huge controversy within the nerd community, and quite frankly, guys, you know, I'm not going to take this too much time to finger wag at you guys, but, you know, for a community that's been so ostracized from mainstream society for a long time and whose members have comprised people that are being made fun of, you do us no favors by getting so upset over the color of a main character in a show just because it isn't exactly what you grew up with.
Let's pay attention here. This is fiction. These are fictional characters. This is not like they did a biopic on Thomas Jefferson and they casted him as an Asian American man, okay? That's not the case here. We're talking about comic book characters, or we're talking about book characters, or former movie characters. You know, it's just, this is all fiction. We can do what we want as long as it makes sense. And I like, the only time that this wouldn't make sense in fiction is if, you know, for some reason they did a new version of a Jane Austen novel, and it's set in the 1800s. It's set in England, and all of a sudden we have a Hispanic lead as Mr. Darcy. Would that make sense in that time, in that setting, with that story? No. But we're talking about superhero movies here. We're talking about people who can turn into fire and fly around, and you're upset that this individual is an African American. What does it matter?
There's that. There's the fact that I can understand this one a little bit more. All the characters, when you compare them to the original cast from the first two films, they're all much younger. I mean, they're all early 20-somethings, I think.
Well, they're actually in their later 20s and early 30s.
But they look younger, especially when you look at Miles Teller, who I think is a great actor. I just saw Whiplash not too long ago. It's a great film.
I haven't seen that one yet.
But, you know, much younger when you compare him to, I don't even know how you pronounce his name. Is it Ian Griffith from the first one? Is that how you pronounce the guy who played Mr. Fantastic in the first film?
Yes, I can never remember how to enunciate his name.
It's a weird Scottish spelling. No offense to our Scottish listeners, but
but here's the thing, Matt. Okay, so in 2004, they published a new set of Fantastic Four comics called Ultimate Fantastic Four.
Yeah, and I hear this is drawing from that, is it not?
That is very correct. I mean, once you if you've read Ultimate Fantastic Four, there are some differences between the movie and this, but the movie has much more in common with Ultimate Fantastic Four than it does with the original lore of Fantastic Four. Now, this publication date went from 2004 to 2009. It wasn't crazy successful. I mean, it wasn't that big, but it's still drawing on some comic books, and they are a great deal younger in the Ultimate Fantastic Four. And so, even though these people, you are absolutely right, because when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh wow, they look a great deal younger than, you know, than Ian and Jessica Alba and whatnot, and definitely Michael Chiklis. But I mean, they are drawing off of established comic books from the Fantastic Four series, and it's just, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like how people felt with Star Trek 09. When they were complaining, they're like, they're too young, it's just Star Trek babies, you know, like, it's just going to be Star Trek Academy, where it's like Star Trek WB. But then when you realize that these actors are older than what Shatner and Nimoy were in the original series, it kind of puts things in perspective.
Yeah, they just happen to look more youthful, no offense to Shatner or Nimoy.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing I don't understand, and I realize we haven't really talked about the trailer yet, but you had mentioned that it seems like there's some animosity in the same way that there was with Spider-Man versus Amazing Spider-Man and rebooting about a decade after their initial entry. Because there's 10 years between Spider-Man 1 and Amazing Spider-Man in 2012. Right. And there's also, just like this one, there's 10 years between Fantastic Four, the original, and Fantastic Four, this version. But I think that I don't really quite understand, you know, the animosity toward this one, because in my mind, this should be a less controversial reboot. Because if you think about it, that first Fantastic Four, some people like it, but it really wasn't critically acclaimed. Not a lot of people took to it. Spider-Man, the first one, was a huge box office success, and along with X-Men, kicked off the modern Marvel era. So that one was a real successful one that they were rebooting. This one, they're rebooting something that was never popular and really is seen as sort of a critical and financial failure in their last rendition. So, you know, to me, this would be a prime opportunity for a reboot.
You know what? I didn't even think of it that way. I mean, you're absolutely right, because, yeah, I mean, the mob is fickle. Like, I don't quite know. I don't think I have an answer for you. I mean, it's just because, yeah, like, even though I didn't particularly like the Tobey Maguire Spider-Mans, they were very successful and they were highly rated. I mean, Spider-Man 2, I mean, got a high, high rating. It was very critically acclaimed. And even though I think it was a horrible movie, it was this, you're right, it was a successful franchise. It was a very successful franchise, and then they rebooted it. People were very much like, oh, why are they doing this? It's too soon. And then it kind of became a joke, like, that this movie was going to get rebooted in less time. But there wasn't as much animosity as there is with Fantastic Four. I don't have an answer for you, but that's a really that's a very observant point.
Not only that, I'm one of the few people that liked Amazing Spider-Man, but, you know, we are seeing a version of the story done pretty much the same way again, with a few minor changes here and there. Here, I mean, just from the trailer alone, and from what I've heard from the backstory of this is a whole different kind of origin story for the Fantastic Four, because I haven't seen that first one in a long time, but if I remember correctly, they went to some space station and got exposed to radiation through an ion storm or something.
Yes.
This one, I keep hearing stuff about transporting to an alternate dimension, and then that space travel somehow alters them while they're there. It's a totally different story. I think this is... Isn't this the way you want to go with a reboot? I mean, like, I thought that, you know, I don't get why people are upset at one, but then, yeah, when they do the other, they're still upset.
Yeah, I don't get it either, because, like, when... In the first one, it was so incredibly hokey, campy, and weird. And, like,
From what I remember, the first one, it felt like, you know, an original series Star Trek episode that gave them their powers, you know, like they travel to the edge of the galactic barrier, that sort of thing.
I think the problem with the Fantastic Four is not in its movie adaptation, but it's ingrained in the story. It's what it is. I mean, this isn't Batman. Okay. Like it's not something that you could stretch your imagination to believe actually could happen. Like Batman, there's a financial price tag to it where if someone was devoted enough, it could happen. Is it silly? Yeah, it's silly, but it could happen given enough money and training. But then when you look at Fantastic Four, a guy's made of rock. Another guy can fly around while on fire.
It's in the name, Tristan. It's fantastic. It's fantasy.
It is fantastical. It is fantasy. It's in the name. You're absolutely right. And, you know, like, you either agree with a premise or you don't. And with that original movie, there were people who complained that it's too cheesy and it's too hokey. But yet they followed the story, you know, like they followed the story very closely. And then in this reboot, they try to do something a little bit different where it's gritty, you know, it looks like a Nolan film. And they try to do the alternate origin story from Ultimate Fantastic Four that involves teleportation, stuff that we're experimenting with right now, you know? And so they try to ground it in quote-unquote realism, but at the same time, you still end up with a dude who has a rock penis. Right. And I think...
To put it bluntly.
To put it bluntly. So I kind of... Like, it's... it. You have this duality in here where, okay, do we want an entertaining superhero movie that we don't have to suspend too much disbelief, but at the same time, the premise is the problem. So I don't know.
I don't know either. And another complaint that I heard is that is what you just mentioned between, you know, people perceive the Fantastic Four as sort of a light comedy sort of run of comics and very family oriented and all that stuff like that. And that was done, you know, successfully or not in those first two movies. I really felt like they try to keep with that tone. And I think that a lot of people were put off by the fact that this trailer looks so dark. At the same time, though, if we think back to less than a year ago, when same studio, too, and when the X-Men Days of Future Past trailer came out, that looked incredibly dark. And that film, there was definitely dark elements to it, don't get me wrong. But it still did lose its identity and become a Nolan film all of a sudden, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think we should be hopeful here. I mean, it's a teaser. It's a teaser, folks. I mean, it's this is not the Fantastic Four that you grew up with and that you knew and love, and that's fine. But I think it's okay to try something new. I mean, it's not going to erase the comics. The comic books are still there. You can still enjoy them. It's not going to erase the previous two movies if you like them. You know, they're still there. And it's just, we tried campy, we tried hokey, and so let's try something different.
I was always curious to see it, but I was never like, it never piqued my interest. And then I saw this trailer and I kind of saw some of the different imagery that they were working with and kind of the premise. And for me, it was kind of like a superhero movie meets like a Close Encounters type science fiction film. And that actually got me more interested to see it. I'm actually looking forward to this film now.
Yeah, this was a non-issue for me. Like when I heard that they were rebooting, I was like, okay, whatever. You know, like it's just another superhero film. It's another reboot. I mean, in the next 10 years, there's going to be even more reboots. And I just didn't care. But when I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, okay, this could be interesting. You know, like this could be fun. I mean, I like a lot of the actors in it, and I like the tone of it. I like the shot selection, and I like that they're doing a different origin story, because that's just cool. Because you hearken it back to Spider-Man. I mean, Amazing Spider-Man and Spider-Man are basically the same movie, but with this one, it feels like you're going to get a very different movie, and that's why you should reboot something, is to do something different.
Not to mention, too, like, just on a personal note, you and I both loved this last summer, Tristan, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
And Toby Kebbell, who played Koba in that film, is actually playing Dr. Doom in this reboot.
I didn't know that!
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know that.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yeah, he's going to be Dr. Doom in his human form, I'm sure, but I'm sure he'll be wearing some sort of costume. But yeah, that's who they got to play Doom in this reboot.
Yeah, I had no idea that was going to be the guy who played Koba. I mean, I'm really intrigued by it, because it's just the last Dr. Doom was cheesy. I mean, the whole movie was cheesy. It's just how it is. And people want that in the comic books, but that doesn't always translate into film, at least not in the current scope of superhero films. But the thing is, I mean, this is just a teaser. Like, the Avengers movies have some great comedy in them while still dealing with dark elements. And, I mean, why can't this one?
We've talked about, you know, on past shows, that Age of Ultron trailer. Super, super dark. But I still don't have any, you know, real issues with or worries that it's not going to have any humor in it. It's just going to have a different kind of tone from the first one. And I think that's the same case here. And I also think, you know, a track record goes a long way. Fox Marvel, for me, because this is Marvel, but it's through Fox, has a much better track record than Sony Marvel. And
yes.
Right now, Fox Marvel has gone through a renaissance, because, you know, for a while they made those first two Fantastic Fours. They weren't so good. X-Men were declining. Look what's happened since the decade turnaround. We've gotten X-Men have come back. And I think that, you know, I have renewed faith in this studio that they'll make a good film. So I'm looking forward to it.
And so am I. And the naysayers out there, I mean, we're not here to change your opinion. We're not here to, like, say you're wrong for having your opinion. It's just, let's give it a shot.
Somebody's got to be positive about this on the internet. So
yeah, and I mean, it's going to be us at the Nerd Party. So, I mean, we're excited to see it. And, you know, like, I think it's going to be a good time. Like, could I be wrong? Absolutely. I mean, trailers aren't everything. But, I went from zero interest to, oh, wow, I'm kind of excited.
Yeah, we will find out in August for sure.
All right. Well, we talked about that for a good deal of time, and I think it needed to be discussed. It needed to be talked about. And but now let's move on to our segment on TV to film. Now, a lot of films are based off of books. I'd say that that's probably the biggest medium that movies are based off of, and even short stories and other films. But one thing that we want to talk about today is films that are based off of TV shows. Now, whether this is the same people who made the TV show making the movie, or just a movie that's based off of a TV show that was decades ago. I mean, either one. And so we're going to talk about our top five favorites, why we like them, and why you should watch them. So Matt, how about you give us your number five?
Okay, my number five is actually one installment in this series, because full confession, I haven't seen them all but this installment, but I really liked this installment, and so I'm sure it's going to be on your list somewhere, or it might be, who knows. But my number five is Mission Impossible, and specifically Ghost Protocol.
Oh, nice.
I've still not seen all the Mission Impossible movies. The Ghost Protocol was the only one I've seen, and I intend to watch all of them before this fifth one comes out this summer. But when I saw Ghost Protocol, it's not like I needed to see it. It's kind of like an American James Bond team, if you will. And I just kind of liked the fun vibe, and it was kind of an action adventure. And what I liked about Ghost Protocol is that it was like an ensemble piece, and I liked everybody in the ensemble. And I've never seen Mission Impossible, the TV show from the 60s, but from what I understand, that also, like Star Trek, had a very limited run. And it's somehow, you know, 30 years later, it became a successful movie franchise. So that's my number five.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the Mission Impossible movies, and I can't believe you haven't seen them. That's so crazy. You're in for a treat, because there's some really good ones in there. And the thing is, though, is that I like that you hearken it back to a James Bond film. Ghost Protocol is definitely what James Bond is today.
Mm-hmm.
In the kind of action adventure feeling to it. And the first Mission Impossible is very much like what James Bond used to be.
That's sort of the vibe I get from it, from the clips that I have seen. Of course, everybody's seen the clip of him suspended going down mm-hmm. on the wire and stuff like that. You couldn't be alive in 1996 and not have seen that somewhere.
Right.
But I look forward to watching them, and I think I'll be able to appreciate them more now that I can actually pay attention to them versus when I was, you know, 7 years old in 1996.
And the third one was J.J. Abrams' directorial debut.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I'm really looking forward to that. And, you know, I haven't seen the previews yet. I don't think it's been released. But if the new one is as fun as Ghost Protocol, I think it's going to be a good time. So.
All right. Well, I don't want to give anything away because I like them so much. And I'll let you make your own opinions on the three that you haven't seen. Because
But before you do, Tristan, spoiler alert. We could have easily put Star Trek on this list, but neither of us did, because we already host Star Trek podcast, and it's a given that we like one or some of the Star Trek movies. So let's just put the disclaimer on front that although that's not on our list, we both like quite a few of the Star Trek movies.
Yes, very much. Thank you so much for mentioning that. Yes, we both love Star Trek, and those movies would most likely be on this list, but we wanted to add some variety. Well, my first one, my number five, is you have to trace the history a little bit, and that is U.S. Marshals.
Now, I see what you did there. Really, you put U.S. Maybe you did put The Fugitive later, but we'll see.
No, I'll be honest right now. It's not on my list. Fugitive is not on my list.
You put U.S. Marshals ahead of The Fugitive.
I did. I know that's crazy. I know Fugitive is a great movie. It was nominated for Best Picture. I can't remember if it won or not.
No, it didn't. Unfortunately, it got released the same year as Schindler's List.
Ooh. yeah, that's some stiff competition right there. But yeah, okay, so for those of you who don't know, The Fugitive is the Harrison Ford movie. I mean, I don't understand how you wouldn't be able to know it. I mean, it's one of Harrison's most famous roles, and he's framed for the murder of his wife.
I didn't kill my wife. I don't care.
Yeah, it's Tommy Lee Jones plays a U.S. Marshal who's chasing Harrison Ford because he escapes from a prison bus on his way to prison after he was convicted guilty. And it's about Harrison Ford trying to clear his name. And this is based off of a TV show an oldie but a goodie TV show about the same premise.
Very popular TV show, from what I understand, too, that TV show's last episode was the most watched finale at the time.
Wow, I did not know that. That's pretty cool. And U.S. Marshals is not exactly a sequel to The Fugitive. It's
spiritual sequel.
It's a spiritual sequel. I like that. It's a spiritual sequel because it's set in the same universe and it has the same cast, just without Harrison Ford. Because in The Fugitive, you have kind of two storylines going at the same time. You have from the perspective of Harrison Ford, who's on the run, and the perspective of Tommy Lee Jones, who's trying to catch him. Well, U.S. Marshals is about Tommy Lee Jones trying to catch Wesley Snipes, who is a quote-unquote guilty man on the run. And I don't know, I like U.S. Marshals a lot. I think my favorite part of The Fugitive was the dynamic between Tommy Lee Jones and his team, and you get a whole bunch more of that in U.S. Marshals, and so I think that's why this one goes above The Fugitive in my mind. And I know I'm going to get some criticism for it, but that's my personal opinion.
Well, it certainly gave us something different to talk about, because Fugitive would come to a lot of people's minds, but U.S. Marshals, just thinking about that, that's the, you know, you think about an era where Wesley Snipes was still a big name action star.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it's been a while since we've seen anything with Wesley Snipes in it. Oh, actually, no, he was in The Expendables, right?
Yeah, he was in Expendables 3, and, you know, of course he's been headlining in prison. That's why we haven't heard from him.
All right. Well, what's your number four?
My number four is actually a movie that I saw. It couldn't have been too long ago. Maybe I think it was 2 years ago on my birthday. They were doing a screening of it, and I had never seen it before. And that is Serenity, the movie that was based off of Firefly, a show that I haven't seen for a long time, and really did when I saw the movie, didn't really remember very much, if anything. But I wanted to see it because I heard it had a cult following. It had to be a couple years ago, because I know it was after I saw Avengers and became more of a Joss Whedon fan. And I heard that this was the first film he actually took on himself and directed. And what I liked about it, and liked but more about it seeing it after Avengers when he found mainstream success, is that he really always did know how to handle an ensemble. And I thought that that was its main strength. That the story was very good. It was very, you know, a space western, which are two genres that you don't think would go together, but they actually did quite well. But the thing that I liked most about it is the direction and the attention paid to several characters at the same time, which is very, very hard to do in a movie because, you know, you only have a limited amount of screen time and you have these characters who, you know, theoretically people like. Mm-hmm. And you want to give them their due, especially since, you know, there's probably not going to be anything afterward. So you're trying to give it, you're trying to, you know, have each character have their moment. And some of the Star Treks even suffer from this. You know, they're just characters that you can't do anything with, and they're just there for a couple of lines. But I think one of Whedon's strengths, and I think that's why he does so well with Avengers, is that he makes sure that he gives a little bit of development for everybody. Of course, more people have more development than others. But everybody kind of gets a moment, and I really, really like that, and I had a good time. It was a good birthday that year.
That's my number one.
Is it really?
Serenity is my number one on this list. I absolutely love this film. This is, by far and large, my favorite movie that's based off of a TV show. This is the ultimate movie based off of a TV show, because this is the fulfillment of a wrongdoing by the Fox studio.
I'm sorry to blow your list so early.
Oh, no, that's okay. That's okay. I mean, like, this is bound to happen because there's so many great things out there, but it's just with Serenity. I mean, I was and am a huge Firefly fan. I watched it while it was on the air. The moment that the DVDs came out, I bought it and watched it over and over and over and over again. I mean, like, my family, and I was still living at home, my family and I would watch it over and over and over again. Whenever we didn't know what to watch, we threw in an episode of Firefly. And we would scream and cry whenever the credits rolled, because we're like, why did this get canceled? Why did this get canceled? This has gone down in history and will go down in history as one of the biggest upsets, in one of the biggest failures in studio history, for canceling, because there has never been such an outcry from the fans like there was from the Firefly fans when the TV show was canceled. This is this Firefly had the greatest opening season out of any television show ever made, and it still got canceled. And when a movie, when Whedon found a home for the movie with Universal Pictures, I'm pretty sure I almost cried. Like, when I heard that Serenity was going to actually happen. And when I saw the trailer, my heart leapt out of its chest. And it's when I was still on dial-up, and it took forever to download the trailer. And it just, I mean, and it did not sell that well, which is really sad, because I wanted another one. But I think Whedon knew that even though their Browncoats, which is the name of the fans of people who like Firefly and Serenity, even though the Browncoats are a very loyal fan base and a very large fan base, it's still not enough to warrant a sequel or make a hit movie. And so,
that being said, though, I mean, like, again, I haven't watched Firefly in a long time, but when I watched Serenity, yeah, of course there's room for a sequel, but I kind of felt like I wasn't, if the sequel didn't get made, it didn't leave me hanging. Like, it gave me what it wrapped it up pretty nicely.
Absolutely, and you're absolutely right. And so, like, I'm okay with it not being a sequel, but the thing is, I'm so in love with these characters that it wasn't so much that the story left me hanging, it was just, I need to see these people again. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm happy with it. And, like, even Orson Scott Card, this was before Ender's Game, the movie got made, and he said, he's like, yeah, even if Ender's Game never gets made into a movie, that's fine, because I'll just watch Serenity. And because, like, even though it has nothing to do with his story, it's such a great sci-fi film. Like, people who haven't seen it, please watch it, because you can enjoy it without watching the show, but it means so much more when you watch the show. Okay, my rant is done. I gotta move on. This was my number one, so I thought I was gonna have some more time to build up to it, but so I still need to give my number four.
You can continue when you get to number one. It's all good.
maybe a little bit, but my number four is Maverick.
Oh yeah, the Mel Gibson Jodie Foster extravaganza.
Yeah, this is a really solid film. This is a really good film. This is, like, I love 90s movies. And when I think 90s movies, I think Maverick. And it's a Richard Donner film. And it's produced by Bruce Davey and Richard Donner. Yeah. And it was written by William Goldman. And it has Mel Gibson, Jodie Foster, James Garner, James Coburn, Alfred Molina. I mean, this is a huge, huge cast. And side note, it was edited by Stuart Baird.
Right. He edited a lot. He's a great editor. I'm not going to take away anything from his editing skills. And James Garner, wasn't he the original Maverick from the show?
That's right. James Garner was the original Maverick, and he plays, spoiler alert for a 94 movie, he plays Mel Gibson's dad in the movie. But you don't find that out until the very end of the movie. And I love Jodie Foster. I think she's a great actress.
Me too.
And this is a very good Jodie Foster role. This is a good Mel Gibson role. And it was a financial success. And it's a fun Western. It's a Western comedy. And I love those. And this was based off of the TV series that was in 1957. It started in 1957 and went on to 1962. Had 124 episodes. So this was a very successful show. It went on for a while.
Yeah, I do remember seeing that movie, and I haven't seen it for a while, but Westerns are not normally a genre that I gravitate to, but that one managed to be a lot of fun. So
yeah, I'm the same. And there's also a cameo appearance from Danny Glover, and they have a wink to the audience where Danny Glover is robbing a bank that Mel Gibson is in. And Mel Gibson swears that he recognizes Danny Glover, and he pulls out his handkerchief of a mask, and they all just kind of stare. They look at each other like, "Do I know you?" Mm-hmm. And then they're like, "No, I don't." And then they run away.
Of course, Richard Donner being the director of all four Lethal Weapons. So. Mm-hmm.
That's right, and it's just it's filled with stuff like that. It's just it's a movie that makes you smile, and we need more of those.
Yeah, totally. And you know what? I'm just going to say this up front because I'll just spoil it a little bit. Two in my top three, including my number three, which is my next one, are 90s comedies, because I really do think 90s were like the best times for comedies. When comedies hit in the 90s, they really hit.
I agree completely, 100%, because like comedies in the 90s, like, there was a subsect of gross comedies or just stupid humor comedies or, like sex comedies. I mean, for as long as there's been movies, there's been sex comedies. But, like, when a comedy comes out today, it's basically, like, Bridesmaids or like Knocked Up, where it's just gross humor after gross humor after gross humor. And in the 90s, like a comedy that wasn't geared towards children didn't mean that there was going to be gross amounts of fart jokes and dick jokes, you know. And it's just, I kind of miss that essence of the 90s where it wasn't all just stupid humor.
Yeah, I do too.
Anyway, that's another discussion that we absolutely need to have. So what is your number three?
My number three, I kind of cheated here. It's a twofer, but they're both based off the same thing. And that's the first two Addams Family films.
Hey, nice.
So I never watched the show because it was after my time. Even though I do watch TV, I've never seen the show. But I do remember watching these films at a very young age and really kind of liking them, even if I didn't get all the humor. I think I just liked watching Thing walk around and on his rollerblades and stuff like that when I was a kid. But I'll tell you what, and it's like, I can't explain to you why I do this. It's just kind of a thing for me. I always watch the first two films because I have them on DVD the day before Thanksgiving. Couldn't tell you why. I've done it for the last 3 years. It's just kind of my thing. But now that I'm older and I get the humor, it's just funny. And they're not afraid to be out there. And it's just, it's weird. And it's almost Tim Burton-esque without being obnoxiously Tim Burton-esque. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, I love it. I can't really put into words why. The humor, I think, is very smart. And the cast is great. I mean, for me, it doesn't get better than Raul Julia and Angelica Houston. To mention Christopher Lloyd, who, you know, is a guilty pleasure for me in anything. I mean, even when he's done his bad comedies, I've always kind of liked Christopher Lloyd.
I'm really glad that you brought this up, because I didn't even think about this for some reason. Like, it just didn't even enter my brain. But yeah, I mean, I love these movies. I actually grew up on the TV show.
Oh, really?
And I know it was past our time, but my mom was and is a huge fan of the Addams Family and the Munsters, and so we would have marathons all the time where my grandfather, like, there was a marathon on TBS, and it was before we had cable, and so my grandfather taped as many episodes of the Munsters and the Addams Family as he could and gave us the tapes. And so I remember staying home sick from school. And so my mom and I would watch the Addams Family, and we would just laugh and laugh and laugh. And then when the movies came out, she didn't really like the movies that much because she thought they were like too dark. Like they're a great deal darker than the TV show. But the thing is, for the time that it takes place in, it has to be darker than the TV show because the TV show is so innocent. But yeah, like I love them though. Like I like them a lot. I like the first one more than the second one. But there's so many great moments in both of them.
I don't know, because like I agree, I love them both. But I don't know. What's her name? Joan Cusack in the second one, being the black widow, man hungry, wants to get everybody's money. That just steals it for me. It really does. Plus, you know, that's when, you know, Christina Ricci was still in her prime, and there's that moment in the second one where she's in the waiting room as Morticia's giving birth, and you know, this little girl's trying to tell her the story of how the stork left her brother, and you know, they're just like, Pugsley's like, our parents are having a baby too. Cut up to Christina Ricci, they had sex.
Yeah, it's so macabre, and so it's very much the Addams Family for that generation.
So I love those films, so it was definitely going to be on here.
Yeah, that's so great. I'm so glad that you brought those up. Well, my number three is a kind of an offshoot of what you talked about, where you talked about Ghost Protocol being your number five. My number three is the first Mission Impossible.
The De Palma film.
I love this movie. This is a great spy movie. This is a fantastic spy movie. And
I remember, and like I said, I remember it being a phenomenon in 1996 because everybody loved this movie. I even remember having the N64 game that came along with it. This was also the time of GoldenEye on the N64. These franchises were huge.
I don't remember the... Oh, yes, I do. Yes, I do. I do remember the 64 game. Oh, man. Yeah, I played that. That's right. Yeah, it's just... This was huge. I mean, you have John Voight, Emmanuel Barrett, Jean Reno, Ving Rhames, Kristen Scott Thomas. You have Vanessa Redgrave. And you have music by Danny Elfman, where before he became obsessed with himself. And so the score is really great and really it's like it's high powered when it needs to be and it's subdued when it needs to be. And the story was by Steve Zalian. And it's just the music, the special effects, Tom Cruise, like ultimate Tom Cruise movie. And I know you haven't seen this movie, and so I won't give too much away. But this movie was, it was just a, it, it's almost a perfect spy film where it has just enough sci-fi tech to make it cool, you know, and, where it's not like, it's not a historical spy movie. Okay. Where it's based in realism. This is a movie. This is very much a film of a spy story.
But I think that's from if it was the same in Ghost Protocol, that's part of its charm.
It's definitely part of its charm. But the thing is though, is that Ghost Protocol is an action film. I would say Mission Impossible is a thriller. I think that's the distinct difference between the two. And once John Woo got a hold of the Mission Impossible franchise, he kind of forever changed it. I don't like Mission Impossible 2.
I hear from fans that's the weakest of the four films so far.
It is absolutely the weakest of the four films. But the thing is, though, is that thankfully JJ did not pick up the tradition of John Woo, but he also didn't pick up the tradition of De Palma. And so I think because of that break with John Woo, JJ was able to do what he wanted, and that's what you're seeing in Ghost Protocol, is that in Mission Impossible 3, it kind of was the beginning of the Ghost Protocol era.
Right.
And so I think you're really going to like 3. I hope you'll enjoy Mission Impossible. But yeah, this one, so much of my childhood was watching this movie and reenacting this movie and just wishing I was a spy. It just kind of fed into my spy romance that I had with James Bond and Ethan Hunt and just all that kind of stuff.
It made Tom Cruise kind of an action star for a while, because when you think about it, he didn't do a lot of action. He was more of a drama guy. Because Mission Impossible was 96. The last big movie that I remember him being in before that was Interview with the Vampire. And that was 94.
And before that, I mean, he had, he had some courtroom dramas. He had The Firm and A Few Good Men before that.
Yeah.
And you have, you had Top Gun and Days of Thunder, but that's him driving in like an automobile, you know, like that's him driving a vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so it's not really him, you know, using his fists and running and fighting and everything like that. And so I think you're absolutely right. It kind of opened him up to be an action star. I don't think we would have gotten Minority Report if it wasn't for him in Mission Impossible.
Certainly not. Definitely not. But good choice there. I knew Mission Impossible would be on there somewhere for you, because you've talked about it before.
I do enjoy it. All right, well, what's your number two?
My number two is a movie that I've loved from my childhood. I will watch it now. I will watch it when I'm in the nursing home in 70 years and still enjoy it. And that would be The Muppet Movie, the original Muppet Movie from 1979. I love all of them, but The Muppet Movie is the most magical one. What is there to say that hasn't been said in the last 30 years about this film? It's timeless. It really is. Yes, it's filled with a bunch of 70s cameos and stuff like that, but the comedy itself is timeless. And that's really hard to do, because usually comedies date themselves with their kind of humor. And, you know, there's a couple of 70s references in here, like I said, but none of it feels dated. It feels like, you know, you could replace the cameos with people who cameo today, and it would still be the same movie. And of course, the songs are classic. And I love the Muppets. If you don't like the Muppets, I don't want to know you.
I love the Muppets, but I don't remember this movie. I don't remember anything about it.
You really? The first movie?
Yeah, the first movie. I mean, I last time I watched it, I was a very young person, and I honestly don't remember it.
This first movie's on Netflix. You get yourself to Netflix after we're done here and you watch it.
I will. I promise. That's a real promise. I will. I'll watch it, because I always get this confused with other films. I know I rented it several times when I was a kid, but I have zero memory of it. I remember them in the car, but that's about it.
And it's the original Muppets. I mean, I like the Muppets that we have today, but this is Jim Henson and Frank Oz and all the original performers at the top of their game.
And also, this movie only cost $8 million to make, and it made $65 in the box office. Now, I know those are small numbers, but think about that.
That's an 8x return on their investment.
Yeah, that's insane. That's crazy. And that is a very successful movie. I had a real debate on which one would be my number one and which one would be my number two. As you guys know now, my number one is Serenity, which is based off of Firefly. And that is a movie that is very near and dear to my heart. But the thing is that my number two defined who I was for a big portion of my life. And I think you know, like, because you know me, I think you know what this is. And a lot of people online who are listening to this, who know me, probably know what this is. And that is The X-Files Fight the Future.
Oh, yes. Yes.
This movie is a good movie. Like, even if you took out the TV show, this is a solid movie. You don't need the TV show. Like, yes, the TV show helps, and it's a mythology movie that's based off of the mythology in the TV show.
Guess what?
What?
I've never seen any of the X-Files.
What? What? None of the show? None of the show?
None of the show, none of the movies. I want to, though.
Well, X-Files is on Netflix, so you get your ass to Netflix as soon as we're done with this podcast.
I know
podcast.
It's on Netflix. That's the next thing I want to tackle is X-Files.
I love the X-Files.
Because keep in mind, X-Files came out in 93. I was 5. It was a little too scary for me. The parents weren't going to let me watch it.
Well, see, like, you know, I was 7. And so it was 7 or 8, because I suck at math. And so, yeah, this was early on, but... This was it was so heavily advertised, and it just, like, back then it was scary. It was very scary. I mean, like, even for adults it was scary. Like, people didn't want to watch it with the lights off, you know, like people didn't want to be alone, like, while they watched it. I mean, like, I think that was even part of their ad campaign, was don't watch it alone. Like, they would end the teasers with don't watch it alone. I mean, this was good television. This was, speak about a phenomenon. This was a phenomenon. The X-Files is ingrained in our culture, and there's been many copycats since. And
there's also talk about recently about bringing it back, possibly. This is what I keep hearing.
I think they're going to pull a 24, where they're going to have a half season come back or something like that. Because David Duchovny has no interest in doing a full season. He doesn't want to do it, and they also don't have the time. Gillian Anderson is very busy doing theater, as well as Hannibal and The Fall. And
Hannibal, by
they're
the way.
They're at the top of their careers, and I'm just so happy that they're interested in coming and doing it back, because the second movie, I did not like the second movie at all. It was really bad.
That's what I kept hearing.
Here's the thing that you need to understand the impact that the movie had. X-Files is, there was two types of X-Files episodes. There was Monster of the Week, and then there was Mythology.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
And Monster of the Week is just you see the monster at the beginning, and then they defeat the monster at the end, or it gets away, and it has nothing to do with the overall story arc. Now, this was relatively new for a show in 93 to have an overall story arc, and that was about Mulder trying to find his sister who was abducted, and how the government was in cahoots with for a planned alien invasion, and about how the X-Files would shed the light on that. And so that's the overall, that was the mission statement of the show. But back then you couldn't do that every week. Now you could do that every week if you wanted to. And so this movie, which takes place between the 5th and 6th season, is all about the mythology of the show, and it propels it forward.
So that's what I wanted to ask you, because I've heard this movie being discussed, and unlike a lot of these movies that are based on TV shows, I'm very much of the understanding that in order to watch Fight the Future, you have to have seen The X-Files, because it progresses the story.
Well, okay, here's the thing, is that this movie is a good movie. This is a solid movie and a very enjoyable movie, even without the TV show. But the thing is, though, with the TV show in the mix, this is a phenomenal movie.
Okay,
so I think it's one of those, like, yes, you could enjoy it without it, but it means so much more with the TV show. It's kind of like Serenity.
Right. Okay.
And so I definitely recommend watching the TV show first. Like, if anything, watch the TV show so you can get to this movie.
Yeah. When I eventually do, you say it takes between season 5 and 6.
That's right, and season 5 is a phenomenal season too.
So then probably it's a good idea to watch, you know, 1 through 5. Then the movie, then continue on to 6.
Absolutely, because season 6 picks up where we leave off in the movie, and there's things that happen in the movie that will only, like, there's things that happen in season 6 that will only make sense if you see the movie. And so, for those of you listening at home, The X-Files is an amazing show, and if you haven't seen it, you need to. I mean, you will understand so much more of our culture by watching this show.
Get thee to Netflix.
And also, this The X-Files was the first show to come out on DVD.
Was it really? I did not know that.
Yeah, let me rephrase that. The first show to have a complete season on DVD.
That's cool. I had no idea.
Because we had best of episodes, you know, like best of seasons and things like that. Like all the time. But this one was the first complete season. And that was when a season of television cost you $100.
Yeah, I remember those days.
And I had all of them. I spent $100 on every single season. With tax, that means I spent over $1,000 just on X-Files DVDs. Now, you can get like three seasons for $20. And every time I see that, I die a little inside.
Yeah. It makes me think of how much like we used to pay for like those early seasons of Next Gen on DVD, which were also like $80 a pop.
I know. Thankfully, I didn't buy any of those seasons. I waited for the Blu-rays. But like I bought season two. And I was just like, you know what? I can't do this. I mean, I'm going to want all of them, and I can't do this again. I can't
total
have another X-Files.
Total tangent. Why season two?
I didn't like season one.
And was season two your only choice, or did you pick that out randomly?
Okay. It was just when season one and season two were out.
Okay, because I was going to that's an odd choice if all the seasons were out and you picked two.
No, I probably would have picked like six or something, like five or six if I had my choice, but... but yeah, like even though like I'm not talking a lot about the movie, I'm talking about basically the impact of the movie of Fight the Future. And I know I've been going on for a long time. I'm sorry. I just love this movie so much. You guys need to watch it.
I will look forward to it. I really do want to see this show. Okay, so my number one, if you've ever heard, sidebar. For our Star Trek shows, I've done little tangent episodes where I get together with your co-host, Charlene, to drunk review certain episodes of Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And if you've ever listened to our shows, then you'll know why this is my number one, because we always end the show with it. My number one is Wayne's World.
Oh.
Kind of cheating, but it is based off of a TV show sketch.
Yeah, so. You're right. Yeah, it's kind of cheating, but no, I think that's good. I think that's all right.
And I literally can not only watch this movie whenever, I know most of the dialogue. This is a 90s movie. Like, I'm not going to deny that it's dated itself, but my God, is it still funny.
And if you want to watch it again, you can just watch Wayne's World 2.
Shut up. I like Wayne's World 2.
please continue. Don't let me stop you.
But, you know, it was... you know, we talk about the 90s being on top for comedy. The 90s really were when Mike Myers was on the top of his game, too, in terms of his writing style and everything. And just the weird sidebars and tangents that they go on in that movie, like just little side adventures. Like there's a scene where they're on the way to some concert, and then Wayne points out to the side, and then they recreate the opening sequence from Laverne and Shirley. And... for no reason. It's just like it's a Family Guy tangent before there was a Family Guy tangent. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just, I can't put into words how much I love both of those films, but especially that first one. It's a 90s comedy. So yes, it's dated, but man, I have to watch it again. It's on Netflix as well. So
I think the beauty of that movie is that it knows that it is a movie that is based off of a stupid sketch on a sketch comedy show, and so it doesn't take itself too seriously at all.
And bear in mind that it's ridiculous. It's one of the few SNL sketch comedy movies that have actually been good, because we've had a lot of them.
Yeah, there has been a lot of them. I mean, like, we won't even talk about It's Just Pat,
right?
You know. But yeah, I honestly had no idea this would be your number one. I knew you loved this movie, but I had no idea it would be your number one.
No, you don't understand. I love this movie.
Well, do you have an honorable mention?
I have three.
Okay, lay them on me.
I'll just go through them real quick. In the same vein as The Addams Family, I watched these two as a bunch as a kid as well. They're not as good, but I for whatever reason, I loved them as a kid. And that's the Brady Bunch movie and sequel from the 90s with Gary Cole and Shelley Long and Christine Taylor. That also has that same charm of Addams Family, and like they're transposing the show from the time it aired to the time that the movie is. And so you have this 70s family stuck in the 90s, but they're still wearing 70s clothes and making all their 70s references. And I just find it hilarious. So that's one of them. Again, guilty pleasure. Number two, of course, for me is Charlie's Angels, the movie version. I watched that when I was in sixth grade a lot, 'cause it was on HBO when we had HBO, and I don't know. It's a dumb movie, but it's just fun. So that one's on my list. And my last one, I was way too young to see this. And, you know, my mom would get upset if I was watching this, but I loved this movie because it was so raunchy and so not for me, because I was about 7 when it came out on pay-per-view. And that's Beavis and Butthead Do America.
Oh, Char loves that movie too.
Oh my God, I love that movie. And I like I said, I remember being at my grandmother's house and her pulling my mom aside, and she's like, "What are you letting him watch?"
Oh, that's so funny.
Those are my 3 guilty pleasures / honorable mentions.
Oh man, Beavis and Butthead was completely taboo in my house.
I'm sure it was, because I grew up in a pretty, you know, liberal household. I mean, my parents were over kind of old school, but, you know, they would let me watch certain things. But if I was too young for that, you know, I can't imagine what it's like in your house.
Yeah, no, that was not done. That was not watched. That was not referenced. That was not anything. Nothing. No, it did not exist as far as my household was concerned. I still to this day haven't seen a full episode.
Oh, you're so deprived.
Well, I have
Patrick Stewart
mention.
Loves Beavis and Butthead. Okay, he's even gone.
I do remember that. I remember
that.
He was on a Letterman. He was on the Letterman, and he talked about how he loved Beavis and Butthead.
If it's good enough for Patrick Stewart, it's good enough for you.
I think that's a good way to live life. I think. I have an honorable mention. I just have one, and I think I'm going to get a lot of criticism for this. This was a very hated film. This got a 10% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Ooh, this should be good.
This movie was not loved at all. It got in the box office, it made $52 million in gross revenues, and it had a production budget of $62 million. Okay, like, it's considered a loss if you don't, you know, double your money back.
Right, this is a real loss if you don't even make budget.
This made less than its budget. That's insane. That's crazy.
Well, you're building this up. I can't wait to find out what it is.
I know. It's Aeon Flux.
That was a TV show before it was a movie?
That's right. It was an animated TV show.
I thought the animated show came afterward. I did not know it was the other way around.
Oh, no, not at all. No, this movie came out in 2005, and Aeon Flux, the cartoon, came out in 91.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. This was a, they had 3 seasons. But the thing is that season 1 was 2-minute episodes with 6 parts, mm-hmm. and season 2 was 35-minute episodes with 5 episodes, and then season 3, you had 10 episodes of 30 minutes.
Try making a movie out of that.
Well, no, the thing is, though, is that, like, Aeon Flux was completely, it was filled with very, very rich story material. It's very out there. It's very weird. It's created by Peter Chung, and he has a distinct style and a distinct vision. The movie is nothing like the cartoon. It is very, very different.
And yet you still like it.
And yet I still like it. That's the thing, is that I love the cartoon. I love the style. I love the verve. And I love the movie because I try to separate them in my mind. Because they're so different, I'm able to appreciate it. Because I don't really think like, oh, this isn't like a retelling of Aeon Flux the cartoon. This is just like I consider this like a reboot. Like, if they actually made Aeon Flux into a movie beforehand, this was a reboot of that. I don't know why I like this so much, but both my wife and I really like this movie. We usually watch this around Super Bowl time. And
is that why you're thinking of it now?
And now that I'm, yeah, now I'm thinking about it because we're recording this in Super Bowl weekend. I think one year when the Bears were in the Super Bowl, my wife and I were in college. And we went to college in the Chicagoland area, and so it was a big deal. And so the entire school was in auditoriums and also in the lunchroom, and they put up big screens. And it was the Indiana Colts and the Chicago Bears were playing each other. And so, like, one side of the cafeteria was Colts and one side was Bears. And so everybody was watching the Super Bowl. And so my wife and I were like, hey, that means no one is on the big screen in our common room. So we ended up watching this movie. And it kind of became a tradition to watch this movie on Super Bowl Sunday. And anyway, a lot of history, nothing about the movie. Can I say this is a good movie? I don't know. I mean, this isn't a guilty pleasure because I honestly like it. I really like it. I think the story's solid. I think the action is great. The special effects are fun. Has a great color palette. The costumes are fantastic. The writing is pretty solid. It's just, here's the thing is that I think it didn't do very well because it's a very out there concept. And it pissed off, it's a very out there concept that not a lot of people can grasp onto. And they pissed off its core audience.
Right.
By doing something so radically different from what the cartoon is, because the cartoon has a huge cult following. So you didn't have your cult following to begin with, and it's a concept that people don't, it's not a generally liked concept that people can latch onto, because it's not about a girl who's pretty behind glasses if only she takes them off and lets her hair down, you know, like it's nothing like that.
So and it was a lose-lose situation.
It was a lose-lose, and Peter Chung bashed this movie before it was even released, and so that didn't help either.
Right.
So I don't know, like, if you have never seen Aeon Flux the cartoon, give this a shot. Like, you might like it. And that's why it's an honorable mention. Sorry, I talked for a long time about an honorable mention, but yeah, it's I like this movie. I think it's a solid sci-fi film. It's just not a solid Aeon Flux film.
And that pretty much does it for our lists, right?
That's it for our list, and thank you so much for listening. At the top of the show, we talked about how you can listen to us. You go to thenerdparty.com. From there, you can access our Tumblr page and every single episode we've ever done.
Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/nerdparty. We're getting more and more likes on there. You can also reach me personally on Twitter at mhansen0207, H-A-N-S-E-N.
And you can reach me on Twitter at theinsanerobin, and you can email us at contact@thenerdparty. Thank you so much for listening.
Coming up next week.
The fall on the way up to the stage.
Was that on purpose? Absolutely.
Was it a fall? What happened?
What do you mean what happened? Look at my dress. I tried to walk upstairs in this dress. That's what happened. What went through my mind when I fell down? A bad word that I can't say.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
In business, as in life, loyalty should never be rewarded with complacency. With a Barclays business account, the longer you stay with us, the more of your monthly bank charges we'll give you back. It's called Loyalty Reward, and it's our thank you to businesses for being a customer. We just think that's business common sense. To find out about moving your business account to Barclays, visit us in branch or go online at barclays.co.uk/businesscommonsense. Terms and conditions apply, only available on selected price plans.